we're going to meet a lawyer who's a partner at the West Australian migration law firm Estrin Saul Lawyers. And the profile on his firm's website says that in 2020 he was a finalist for the Lawyers Weekly Partner of the Year Awards. What the website doesn't say, however, is that in 2023, Danny Estrin was also a finalist for the Eurovision Song Contest, representing Australia with his progressive pop metal band Voyager. And Voyager certainly did Australia proud in the grand final, coming ninth. So it's no surprise to find that Danny's nominated 2023 as the year that made him. Danny Estrin, welcome to the year that made me.
Thank you very much. It is indeed quite the year. I thought 2023 was going to be a quiet year, but alas, no.
And I'm sure it's got plenty more in store for you, Danny. But look, let's start with the basics. In case anyone else is looking to become the way you're described on Voyager's website, a guitar-wielding, songwriting powerhouse who's a lawyer by day and a rock star by night, could you tell us how you did that? Maybe by starting with where you were born and where you grew up.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I was born in Germany, in Buchholz in der Nordheide, which is sort of northern Germany near Hamburg. And we migrated to Australia in 1992. I didn't speak any English, and it was quite a traumatic time because I had a mullet and a rat's tail at the time, which was huge in Germany, not so much in WA, although, you know, it has made a comeback. So after the migration journey, you know, teenage years, et cetera, you know, bullying at school, that sort of stuff, you start getting into heavy music, and it goes from classical music to like really extreme death and black metal. And, you know, you find a subculture, you find a community that understands and respects you for who you are. You kind of stick with that. You stick with metal, and then you decide, you know, what do I do at uni? Well, law sounds like a good thing. I'll do it. Why not? Law arts degree at the University of Western Australia. And then my parents said, oh, you should probably just get admitted as a lawyer. And I thought, oh, okay, we'll do it. I started work with the Department of Immigration, Multicultural and Indigenous Affairs, as it was then. Quite a nice little summary of portfolios, which is slightly inappropriate at the time. Yeah, and then I decided, look, I will get admitted. And we did articles of clerkship, as it was back in the day. And I did that at the Australian Government Solicitor in Perth. And look, immigration law was always a passion because I have a penchant for weird bureaucracy, countries and passports and unnecessary red tape. And then concurrent to that was always the metal and the music. Voyager is the band, and you know, we started that around uni days, 1999. No one was really doing melodic metal at the time with keyboards and synthesizers. It was all very, very heavy and, you know, growly and deathcore-y. And then it sort of it became a parallel career path. You know, we released an album on a Dutch label and sort of did little tours here and there. And then it kind of grew and grew. Now we're seven albums in, and it's kind of it's refreshing to have the sort of right brain, left brain divide that I've been able to maintain for these last 20 years. As you will very well know, it's very much right brain and left brain in the law as well. So I'm one of the few people who has been fortunate enough to be able to carve out two careers.
Yeah, and how does the split of your time go, Danny? And how's that sort of changed over the years between time spent being the front man of Voyager and time spent as the front man of Estrin Saul Lawyers?
Look, it's one of those things you make time between things, and it was hard in the beginning, especially when we were starting out being a smaller firm. I was working a lot on tour. There was moments in, you know, on tour buses in your bunk as you're trying to lodge last minute federal court applications. You know how it is, you know, doing submissions on stage while you're doing sound check, doing phone calls with clients who really don't know where you are. And I was 3 a.m. in the Netherlands, and I remember it distinctly. There was one client who was in Canada. It was a Hong Kong national in Canada trying to get to a visa to Australia. And I was talking to him via a tour bus in the Netherlands at 3 a.m. And it was just this wonderful global feeling that can never be recreated. So you make time between time, essentially. And I think when you've got a passion for something, you make it work somehow. And I've always had very, very understanding employers who've always been, you know, kind of into music and into doing what I do. And I think as long as you do good work and you don't let that part down, I think you can successfully do both. It just means that you never have a 9-to-5 job.
No doubt. On the year that made me, we're speaking with Danny Estrin, migration lawyer and founder and frontman of Voyager, Australia's ninth place getting Eurovision Song Contest band for 2023. Danny, I wonder, is there a story that you could tell us about working in the field of migration law that sums up what it's about for you?
Look, there's so many stories, and one day I should write a book about the crazy times of migration law, because you do get to know people that are in extremely difficult situations, and helping them navigate a way out of that is absolutely phenomenal. You know, there's people who come into your office and said, I've been unlawfully in Australia for 38 years, please help me. Mm. And then when you do get to sort of regularise the status and help a person, you know, realise their dream of living in Australia and contributing to the country, it's such a wonderful feeling. And it's, someone asked me, do you prefer the music to the law? And it's like, well, they're different happinesses. You know, you can play in front of 11,000 people and go and have that feeling of elation, but you can also, just like I did yesterday, call someone and say, hey, your 10-year journey is over, you're now a permanent resident after fighting through tribunals and courts and all sorts of things. And that is a different kind of satisfaction. You know, it's more of an intellectual satisfaction that you might not get from the creative satisfaction that you get from the band. But one of the key moments was probably the Port case, the Port at Ashmore Reef, which we ran a few years ago, which got us off the Christmas list of former Immigration Minister Peter Dutton and now opposition leader. It was a case that we ran where we challenged the policy of the government of dragging asylum seeker boats to what was called the Port of Ashmore Reef to essentially deny people from having certain access to certain visas, certain protection visas. So we challenged it in the federal court and said there's no port at Ashmore Reef, and in order for there to be a port, there needs to be some sort of infrastructure. There needs to be something more than just sand. And we won. The federal court said, yes, that's right, there's no port if there's actually no port. So, which means it gave access to, you know, a couple of thousand asylum seekers to be able to make proper application, as is fair, as is dictated by, you know, natural justice and procedural fairness. So that's one of those things where you have a victory where you feel like you've successfully challenged the system with, you know, with perseverance, with a certain degree of intellect, and those kind of key moments in law show that you can actually make a difference. And that's really, really wonderful. So I think immigration law is more interesting and more fun and more exciting than a lot of people think. You get that personal journey, and you're not just, you know, you're not just looking after banking transactions and commercial transactions. You're looking after people's lives and changing them for the positive, which is really important to me.
Absolutely. And Danny, you've alluded earlier to, I suppose, some challenging years as a youngster, years that certainly gave you an ability to hold and maintain a haircut that stands out from the crowd. And you've certainly got an amazing do these days as the front man of Voyager. How does that go down in legal circles?
It goes well. Look, firstly, as you know, we have two members of the ball community in Voyager, so you know they extend their sympathies to you, Julian. And I'm afraid, you know, I don't like talking about my hair too much, you know, in front of people who are perhaps less hirsute yes. than me. How do I get away with it? I mean, look, it ties up nicely in a bun. Actually, one of the benefits of having a sort of half side shaved is that when you do tie it up from the front on, as you probably would have seen through my profile picture on the website, you can't really tell that I've got long hair. And I remember being headhunted once by a firm in Melbourne, and they said, would you consider getting a haircut because law is conservative? And I said, absolutely not. There's no way I'm getting a haircut. To the credit of the legal community, they have embraced, especially in Australia, they have embraced me and our firm and what we do and the sort of slightly eclectic, I guess, landscape and the parameters in which we move. And they've gotten behind us, you know, the law societies, the law council, they've embraced it, you know, shows that lawyers are probably a little bit more progressive than people give them credit for. And even, you know, I did an interview a couple of weeks ago with the Dutch Society of Jurists, and they got behind and they were like, how on earth are you doing this? How can we make lawyers cooler? And I think hopefully we've contributed a little bit to making the legal profession a little less stuffy than it is.
That's also great to hear. Now, Danny, I wonder if you could give us a sense of the sort of gigs that Voyagers played before the Eurovision finals, and then tell us about what it was like to play what must have been one hell of a moment and a gig.
Look, we've played some fantastic shows to thousands of people. We've played awesome club shows to, you know, a few hundred, which is probably my favourite type of gig, you know, a small, sweaty club show. But, God, we've played some absolute, absolute dirt shows as well, which you just like, these wonderful Spinal Tap moments. One that springs to mind particularly is the White Hart Hotel in Bridgewater. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again, because it's so great. we rocked up and there was literally no one there. The support band had pulled out because we had been announced to play in what appeared to be a disused skittle alley with, you know, bikies in the car park just giving us the finger. And we thought, there's no way we can play this show. And, you know, there was this real Spinal Tap moment where we were like, why are we doing this? And we were about to pull the pin. You know, the drummer was sort of drawing a Voyager logo on the little blackboard that was there, trying to be all positive. It's like, oh, well, at least we'll treat it like a rehearsal. And then in comes, in a wheelchair, this gentleman who had the entire Voyager back catalogue on CD just piled up on his little tray in his wheelchair. And he's just looked at us and he went, this is the greatest day of my life. Oh. And he's like, and it's my birthday and I'm raising money for ALS. And wow. I was just like, this cannot get any worse / better, because we're going to just play a show for this dude. And I think two other people rocked up and we were like, what songs do you want to hear? And so for this guy, we just played a private show in beautiful, beautiful Devonshire, after we just played, you know, a sold out festival in the Netherlands. And it was just this moment where you're down in the doldrums and this one little thing can turn it around and make it such a memorable experience. And that is the wonder of playing live music, because you just never know where it's going to take you.
Absolutely. But it takes very few people to the finals of Eurovision. What's it like to be there performing on such a huge stage and in a huge room, and also with just such, you know, pressure and attention as well?
Well, it's less intimidating than appearing in the High Court, I can tell you that.
I believe that.
Yeah, you do, right? You know what I'm talking about. And it's just so awesome. You get there and because of the experiences that we've had, we're not 18 years old being thrust onto the biggest stage in the world. We are seasoned live music professionals. So we've seen the worst and we've seen, you know, the mediocre, and we've slept on couches and beds that you wouldn't even believe. Hardly call them beds. And to walk up onto that stage and just feel the exhilaration that is, you almost feel like this is meant to be. This stage is built for us. And that moment of exhilaration is second to none. And when that stage then is filled with the roar of the crowd on, you know, semi-final night and then finally grand final night, that is magic that you just simply, that money simply cannot buy. Because that exaltation from the crowd, you hear that. You've got in-ear monitors that are supposed to block out all the sound, but it doesn't. They don't manage to block out the roar of 11,000 people, let alone the imaginary roar that you can hear in your ears of the other 200 million people that are tuning in. So it is just an absolutely magical moment. Does it detract from some of the other shows? Have we had magical shows with a couple of hundred people? Of course, you can't compare the two. There's just so much magic in being finally on that stage. And I remember the head of the BBC production team saying how joyous he felt when he saw us on that stage, because they designed that stage. You know, they put so much effort in designing the LEDs, designing the shape of the stage. And he said to us, you guys used that stage the way that it was designed by us to be built. And that to me meant almost more than anything, because these people have spent hours, months, you know, building this amazing platform for us to be able to perform our music. And to hear those words was absolutely magical.
And you absolutely nailed it. Well, it's been a delight speaking with you, Danny. Thanks so much for joining us on The Year That Made Me.
It's been an absolute delight. I've got to say, Julian, I'm a big fan. I've been a big fan of you and The Chaser and going back so many years. And I think it's so awesome to have, you know, a fellow lawyer understand the plight of the push and pull between the legal profession and the creative industries. I think there's a lot more overlap than people give it credit for.
Absolutely, there is. It's been great speaking with you. And Danny, we do finish off with a piece of music. Now, what are we going to go out with today?
We're going to go out with a song called Love You to Death by a band called Type O Negative. And it's a band that was my gateway into a heavy music. You know, it was like Nirvana, classical music, then Nirvana, and then this. And it's just so beautifully heavy, beautifully melodic, beautifully melancholic. And they're one of the greatest bands of all time, because they take their music seriously, but not themselves. And that's the adage that Voyager ascribes to as well. You've got to take your music and your art seriously, but not necessarily yourself. So here it is, Type O Negative, Love You to Death, an absolute banger and just uplifting melancholy in its true form.
Danny Estrin, thanks once again.
In her place, 100 candles burning, a salty sweat drips from her breast, her hips move, and I can feel what they're saying, swaying. They say the beast inside of me is gonna get ya, get ya.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations, live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.